So Gemara is not here. All right. Pull up this one of these devices. All right. So let's try to, in our limited slot, let's try just to get us a few more words about the union of the brachos and how they relate to other concerns about the brachos, and maybe talk about shad a little bit, see how much we can fit in. That essentially, the Gemara had told us about a chiyuv of brachos, and that those brachos involve a bracha of lahadlik, shasanisim, and shehechyanu. And we discussed a little bit how it's possible that the experience of the brachos with Ner Chanukah is more than a birchas hamitzvah, and that extends to perhaps the whole set of the brachos, that all of them become a part of the mitzvah itself. So that may explain a few other things, and maybe if we can say it a little more sharply. For example, there is a discussion, which we started yesterday, the question of the brachos of Sha'asa Nisim and Shechianu, are they limited only to the time of the Hadlaka? Or could you theoretically have these brachos separate from the Hadlaka? So we saw, for example, that the She'ilta sounds like you could have Sha'asa Nisim separate from the Hadlaka, and that the Me'iri has a lashon that if somebody's in a place where he can't light menorah and he can't see the menorah either, that there is a daya, which he seems to think is substantial, that one should say Sha'asa Nisim and Shehechianu, which seems to suggest that, let's say, for example, the Shehechianu is not on the mitzvah of the Hadlaka per se, but it's on the Yantif, it's on the occasion of Chanukah, and therefore you could make it even disembodied from the mitzvah of the Hadlaka. And that's an interesting idea. The problem is that it seems to contradict another statement of the Me'iri. The Me'iri in Maseches Megillah, where the Me'iri says explicitly that in the context of Neres Chanukah, the Shechianu is recited on the Hadlaka and is not recited on the Zman, on the Regel. So, for example, the Gemara says that one can recite Shechianu even Bashuk, even in the marketplace, suggesting that it's not connected to any action, but that it's about the day. So many of the later Sfarim, the Pri Chadash, the Pri Megadim, and others point out that they think that that's only relevant to a Yontif Min HaTorah, but to something like Chanukah, which doesn't have an essence in the character of the day, it doesn't have such a relevance. That the Shechianu on Chanukah is relevant only to the mitzvah and not to the day itself. So how do you resolve that stira in the Me'iri? On the one hand, the Me'iri seems to say that it's possible to have it separate from the Hadlaka. You could have the Shahanis and the Shechianu separate from the Hadlaka. That's what he says in Maseches Shabbos. And in Maseches Megillah, he says that it's not like other Moadim of the Torah, where the Shechianu was connected to the day itself. You also find a little bit of a stira, perhaps, in the Mishnah Berurah, because the Mishnah Berurah, on the one hand, talks about if somebody forgot to make a Shechianu the first night, so he says he thinks you can make it any other night, that's the Shulchan Aruch, you can make it any other night, but the Mishnah Berurah says that means any other night when you're lighting, not just Stam, make it any time over Hanukkah, but when you light candles, the second night, the third night, etc., you can make a Shechianu then. But then elsewhere, he also is open, not so far elsewhere, in Sifkat and Dalid, he's open to the possibility of making the brachos after the Hadlaka. So is there a way to reconcile these contradictions? Jonathan?
I think it might have been either Shartin or Shartzuba there that points out that even though we say that the Shechianu is on the Yom, not necessarily the Hadlaka, but all of the brachos were Misakein during Shas Hadlaka.
Right, so you could say that theoretically the Shechianu is on the day, but nonetheless, despite the fact that it could have been said like that, but Chazal attached it, ideally at least, to the Hadlaka. But still, would that explain why you could only make it, because he also has a suffix, at least Mishnah Berurah has a suffix, that maybe that's only L'chachila, and then maybe if it's the eighth night of Chanukah and you missed it, and you don't have another opportunity to light, then maybe there's more flexibility. What about for the Me'iri? Would it help for the Me'iri?
again, ideally it would be attached during the brachas, but it wouldn't be ma'akev your mitzvah. Let's say your separate chiyuv of saying that bracha.
Except that in Megillah it seems to really say that it's not on the zman, it's on the hadlaka. So there is another approach one could take to this whole. It's not another approach; it's really consistent. But if we say that the brachos themselves are part of the mitzvah, as we've been mentioning so far, so maybe you could say as follows. And this approach, this first part, is mentioned in the sefer that we've talked about a few times, Yireach L'Mo'adim Revulsion. Now, what if we say that the bracha of Sha'asa Nisan is an act of Hodah, right? We saw yesterday the Maharai in the back of the Rambam, that Hadlaka U Birchoseha are fulfillments in Hodah. So which means also not just one bracha, but the brachos. So maybe the bracha of Sha'asa Nisan itself is an act of Hodah. So maybe it's possible to say, when it comes to Hanukkah, there's no Shechianu on the day, but there's a Shechianu on the Hadlaka. But the Hadlaka is itself comprised of a couple of parts. So part of the Hadlaka is Hodah, as expressed with Sha'asa Nisan. So theoretically, you could have Sha'asa Nisan by itself, and that could get a Shechianu. And maybe that's what the Meiri means. Maybe the Miri is saying that if you don't have any opportunity to light or even to see a candle, maybe you can still make a Sha'asa Nisan. That the Sha'asa Nisan is a patch of the day. And once you're making a Sha'asa Nisan, you're doing the mitzvah of Hodah, and you can make a Shechianu on that. Jonathan?
According to that, why wouldn't you go to the extreme and say, so if you're saying your Sha'asa Nisan, your Sha'asa Blacha, so you should say two Shechianus, your mitzvah of Blacha and your mitzvah of saying the bracha of Sha'asa Nisan?
Because we never say two Shechianus, right? So we...
If you say it's two different mitzvahs here,
you know, if they're attached, it's two different components to the mitzvah. And it's all attached. And even when we have more than one mitzvah, like, for example, on Purim, right, if we assume that it's on the mitzvah, so not on the day, which is likely, right, we still tell you to have intent for all the mitzvahs in one Shechianu. And even on the Seder night, when we have mitzvahs and we have the Yom, we never have more than one Shechianu. But...
Perhaps, maybe that's what the Meiri is getting at. It's interesting that the Sha'asa Nisan itself is the mitzvah, and therefore maybe the Shechianu could come with it.
And maybe that's what the Mishnah Berurah is getting at as well, that the Mishnah Berurah is saying that you shouldn't make the Shechianu disembodied from the Hadlaka. But if you forgot all the brachas, and you're saying the Sha'asa Nisan afterwards, so then the Sha'asa Nisan can justify the Shechianu. And maybe that's the key difference. So the idea of the bracha being a bracha of Hodah itself, maybe being a bracha on the Hodah, or a bracha that is itself the mitzvah of Hodah. So that could give us some perspective on our sugya here that kind of is intertwined on the sugya of Haroah. So just to give a few minutes to that sugya of the bracha of Haroah. So who recites the Berachas Haroah? Right. Has any of us ever recited the Berachas Haroah? I mean, probably not. Why not?
Three conditions according to the
Taz. Okay, so what are the three conditions?
You haven't lit, there's no one in your house lighting for you, and you're not going to light there.
Okay, so presumably we assume that it's really only reserved for somebody who's not connected to any hadlaka, which is the tzaddik shop of all three of those conditions. We mentioned in the past that, just parenthetically inserted here, that the Rugachever thought that there were two components to Hanukkah, and that one of them was Megillas Tainus, was the idea, all the Yom Tovim that Chazal had once upon a time had for Nisan, and that since Megillas Tainus is not applicable anymore, that part of Hanukkah is also not applicable, and that the Bracha of Haroah was connected to that. But separate from that, even if we don't assume that the Bracha of Haroah is no longer applicable, we assume that it is applicable. But the question could come up, so why don't we ever recite it? So presumably we don't recite it because either we are lighting ourselves, or worst case scenario, so to speak, even if we're not lighting ourselves, but we have somebody in our household lighting for us, so we're not so disconnected from a hadlaka that we should recite a Berachas Haroah. Now that's the way the Shulchan Aruch paskins.
that if you have somebody lighting on your behalf, lighting in your household, then you don't make the bracha sarar. And that's the view of the Rashba and the Ran, if you get a chance to see those Rishonim. But there is another view in the Rishonim, right? Rashi and the Mordechai, and probably the Rambam also. Right? The Rambam is not explicit on this point, and the Magen Mishnah reflects the fact there's a whole Machlokas Rishonim on this. What's the view of those Rishonim? Jonathan?
That if you haven't lit yet, but you're still going to light later, so then you should say Brichas Aroah.
Right, so that Brichas Aroah is not just for somebody who's not lighting at all, but even somebody who has not yet lit, but will light later, or has somebody who will be lighting on his behalf. So if that's the case, what exactly is going on here? What's this Machlokas about? And why should it be that halacha l'maisa, we assume you only make it if you have no lighting going on at all? And if you have somebody lighting for you, then you don't make it? And on the other hand, you have the Rambam and the Rashi and the Mordechai perhaps saying that you light it even if it's being lit on your behalf. So there are a number of mahalchim that you find in this far, and they all kind of revolve around a certain point. For example, the Rav Tertzin, we've discussed him in the past, Talmud Briskarav, who wrote the Kuntres Chanukah Megillah. So he assumes that perhaps the issue is as follows, that should we view the bracha of Sha'asa Nisan as a Birchas HaMitzvah, or as something else? Is it a part of the mitzvah of Hadlaka specifically, like the bracha of the Hadlik, or is it something completely separate from it? So according to those who would say that it's only for those, it's really should only be attached to your mitzvah, and if you have a mitzvah, you don't make it in a different context, then it becomes part of the Birchas HaMitzvah package. Well, let's say according to the Rambam, that even if you're going to have someone lighting on your behalf, you still make it anyway. And maybe it's less of a Birchas HaMitzvah, it's just a bracha that we do together with the mitzvah. And he notes there's another machlokas, that what if you yourself lit, but you forgot to say Sha'asa Nisan? Do you make a bracha on seeing a candle later? So that was a machlokas the Prima Gadim thought no. And Rabbi Kiva Eger, in that famous tshuva that we talk about a lot in the context of the Neir Shel Hizr, in Mazur Tanyana and Siman Yud Gimel, Rabbi Kiva Eger maintains that you would make a bracha on such a viewing. So there again, perhaps the machlokas is this really a part of the Brichas HaMitzvah that should be part of your mitzvah, and if you miss it, you don't make it afterwards? Or is it only ideally associated with your mitzvah, but really it's a bracha about something else, and therefore, even if you've already lit, you can make the bracha of Haroah afterwards.
The way the Mishnah Berurah quoted that issue wasn't a little bit more limited than if, let's say, it was X nights of Chanukah, so you
Lit, let's say it's the six night Hanukkah, you lit your first drink candles, then you realize you forgot to say bracha, then they brought the question, should you say another bracha, that's still b'shas, your halakha in general, but the same machlokas. So you're not doing the halakha, you're just seeing the candle now. But the case in the Mishnah Berurah brings, they quote the Rebbe Kiva Eger and the Shartzion, and quote the Rebbe Gadim. So they were talking about a more extreme case even where you, those like hours afterwards. That's the machlokas.
Well, either way, you're not performing the halakha now, you're seeing it.
No, but you already lit, you only lit half of your candles, you still have half of your candles to light. That was the case of Mishnah Berurah.
The case that Rebbe Kiva Eger is talking about, because you've already questioned about the Neiros of Hidr. So it's more limited from that perspective. If you didn't have any halakha at all, then maybe it shouldn't apply.
Right. Exactly.
Okay. Possibly. I have to think about that a little more if that's really true, if that's really the position. Not sure if that's really the position. But if that's the case, you're saying it's still connected to the halakha in some
sense. It seems to be on the Shari too, in my opinion.
Okay, I have to think about that a little bit more. Rav Soloveitchik had a similar approach to this, but he's formulated it a little bit differently, and that he thought that the question was, really, what is, again, the bracha of Sha'asa Nisan? Is it a bracha on the mitzvah of Hadlaka, or is it a bracha on seeing the Ner Shel Hanukkah, even for the one who is Hadlik? In other words, maybe the act of seeing the Chanukah candles is not like a runner-up for somebody who's not madlik. But even the one who is madlik, when he makes the bracha of Shas and Nisan, he does it on the act of seeing the candles. This is similar, for example, we spoke earlier in the year about the mitzvah of shofar. Before Rosh Hashanah, we spoke about shofar, and we discussed the question of if the mitzvah of shofar is to blow the shofar, and just one person does the mitzvah on behalf of the whole tzibur, or is the mitzvah to hear the shofar, and that even the one who's blowing the shofar, his fulfillment of the mitzvah comes from hearing the sound that he himself generates. So maybe you could say that when it comes to Neres Hanukkah, you have the same idea, that maybe there is a mitzvah specifically to see the Neres Hanukkah, and that even the one who's lighting it is really doing two mitzvahs. He's lighting it, and he's seeing it, and therefore the bracha of Shas and Nisim is on his seeing of the lights, right?
So then if someone was lighting to be Yotze somebody else, then the other person would also make the bracha.
If somebody would be Yotze with the bracha, you could hear the bracha of the...
But why wouldn't he also?
Because he could be Yotze if he was Shemaya Kalman, and it probably is a more complete fulfillment, so he won't get involved in making extra brachas.
So then if he's being Yotze with somebody who he's not with?
Ah, right, so that's the question. So that's why you have this focus among the Rishonim, even though we don't pass him like that in the Maisa, but there are Rishonim who say that, that even if you go to say it with somebody else, but you see Hanukkah candles, maybe you should make your own bracha if you're present.
It's only if you don't have somebody else lighting for you, though.
Right. But either way, it comes out to the point that if you do have somebody, there are Rishonim who maintain it, even if you do have somebody lighting for you, right? So you are in fulfillment of the Hadlaka part, but you see candles, so then you should still make the bracha. And it's interesting, I added to the list yesterday, I should take a look at the Bach. The Bach in Tafrei Shayin Vav, I think, where the Bach maintains that he thinks the Maisa, you'd have to really be there in order to get the full fulfillment of Neres Hanukkah, because when somebody lights on your behalf, that just addresses the Chovos HaMamon, he says, the obligation on your money that there should be Neres Hanukkah lit. But the idea of the Hodah that comes from the Shas and Nisan, you're not going to fulfill that unless you are actually present here at Bracha. And that's why he understands that you are Rishonim, that even somebody who has somebody lighting on their behalf should make it somewhere else. And Rav Soloveitchik, when he mentioned this possibility, he said this could also explain why it is that there is a machlokus about when you should make the Shas and Nisan. And we saw yesterday that the Ritva and others quoted Machlokes that even though it's brought in the Ramah, that you should make all three brachas first and then light the candles. But some of the Rishonim say make the bracha of Bahadik, light the first candle, and then make the other two brachas. So said the Rav, you could understand that view, because maybe the bracha of Shas and Nisan is really a bracha on seeing the candles. And therefore, maybe you have to have the candle lit first before you make that bracha. So in the Sefer that was published, Rav Shachter notes on the Rav's Shurim, so he notes there that the Rav always liked to be Yotzei L'chol HaDeis. So he said, in general, when it's not the first night, so you have the opportunity to do that, because make the bracha of Hadron on the first candle. And then if you make and the other two brachos after the first candle. So if it should be after there's a candle, so there already is a candle. And if it should be over Lasi Asan, so you still have the other candles, it's a little bit over Lasi Asan as far as the other candles. But on the first night, you don't have a choice. The first night, you should follow them up and make all the brachos first. But it represents this idea again that maybe the bracha of Haroah represents the fact that the bracha of Shas and Nisan has a little bit more to it. And this could also explain the Sapsak in the Shulchan Aruch, that even though the Shulchan Aruch maintains this view that somebody who has candles lit on his behalf does not have to make the bracha haroah when he sees candles, but then he also paskins that somebody who's in the middle of nowhere, even where he's not going to see any candles, even if his family is lighting on his behalf, maybe he should light with brachos anyway, appreciation is that effect. You should light and make a bracha. So perhaps this is what he's saying, that really, your achiyuv, in essence, you're fulfilled with somebody who's lighting in your household. And we don't require you to make a bracha if you happen to see a candle outside of that. But if you're in a setting where you're not going to see any candles, so then you really do have a concept of
Re'iyah as a chiyuv,
and therefore you should make the bracha on lighting a new candle so that you'll have the opportunity to do that. So you'll have the opportunity to see the candles. Okay. So that's essentially, there's more to say about it in the interest of time. So that's what we want to say about that Indian of Haro. I just mentioned one or two other shvekas about it, that there is a question in general about the Neros, let's say Friday afternoon. So Friday afternoon, if you light the candles then, so when somebody sees the candles Friday afternoon before Shabbos, can they make the bracha on that? So that perhaps ties into the whole question we spoke about at the very beginning of the Zman. What does it mean, the fact that on Friday afternoon we light the candles before dark? Does that mean that this is the only thing we can do in order to have candles later? So it's not the mitzvah itself, but it's a necessary step? Or do we say more than that, that somehow Chazal made the Zman of the mitzvah even before it's dark? And therefore, maybe it can be even considered a Ne'er Shel Mitzvah for the purposes of Brichas Arot. Of course, there's also a question, can we consider a Ne'er Shel anything? And a candle during the daytime, so the Gemara has the attitude that a candle during the daytime is useless. So is there any significance at all to seeing this candle, even if you want to say it's somehow a key in HaMitzvah, it's a suffix that the Sfarim have. They also raise the question of whether there's a bracha of Haroa to be made after a half hour. So in other words, does it cease to have the mitzvah status at that point, and therefore there's no Indian in making the bracha? Or should you say that it continues? The truth is, that seems to be much more understandable only in the setting of Zman HaGemara, where everyone was lighting between Shkia, Shtucha Rebbe, and Lashon. That nowadays, people light at whatever time. So I don't know how we could assume that an observer would ever know whether there is a Kiyam Mitzvah, if that's the case. It's only in the first half hour. So you see somebody in the window, how is anyone supposed to know how long it's been there for? So either you'll say the whole concept is then not applicable at all, or that it's not bound to this, but that's suffix. It's hard to know, just practically speaking, how would it play out in a contemporary setting where you're not really lighting at the same time. Okay, so we will just, so we have to be on, trying to figure out whether we should go on for a few minutes with Hot Joint. So again, quick call, raise your hand if you're able to stay for a few more minutes.
Mincha or Shir?
Both, for a few minutes. That's not for sure. We do have a menu. Okay, so those who have to leave, can leave, but if you stay for a few minutes, we'll just go on for a few minutes and we'll go down the door. So the question of the sugya of chashad, that's the next sugya which we'll just speak about for a few minutes and we'll continue tomorrow. So the Gemara on the bottom of Gimel Aleph, the topic of Gimel Beis, talks about this idea that if somebody has more than one entryway, so then we're worried that it's going to look like he's not lighting at either one, and therefore because of chashad, he should light on both. So what's the nature of that institution? If this idea of lighting an extra candle because of chashad, and chashad itself is a very complicated concept. What exactly, when we talk about chashad in Marasayim, B'chol Tarakuba, it means different things in different places. Maybe that's something we'll fill in a little bit about tomorrow. But we find the different components to it. And sometimes it means people will suspect you of doing the wrong thing. And sometimes it means that people will be misled into the wrong kind of behavior. People will see you doing something which looks wrong but isn't. People might think that it's mutter. So in general, those are two mutually exclusive possibilities, that is one or the other, because either people trust you or they don't trust you. So if they don't trust you, so then they're not going to learn from your behavior. They may suspect you, but they're not going to learn from your behavior. If we think they're going to learn from your behavior, it means they're not going to be close to you. So it's Chashad and Marasayim in that sense would be two separate things. But in general, we have an attitude of Yisim Nikim, that we should try to be pure people's eyes. We shouldn't look like we're doing the wrong thing. I'll say that famous story about the Chafetz Chaim. And at the Chafetz Chaim, of course, in the train, or maybe in this case, in the wagon, he was being brought to a certain city to speak. And the driver of the wagon said to him, he didn't know who he was. He said, "Oh, you're picking a good day to go to Washington Heights. And the famous Chafetz Chaim is coming to speak." So the Chafetz Chaim wanted to be modest about it. So he said, "Oh, Chafetz Chaim, he's no big deal, he's not so great." So the wagon driver got very upset at this question of Chafetz Chaim, and he threw Chafetz Chaim out of his wagon. So afterwards, Chafetz Chaim was reputed to say, "Oh, I see from here that you can't speak Lashon Hara even about yourself." And Soloveitchik was reputed to say, when he heard the story, that he always knew that. He knew that you're not allowed to speak Lashon Hara about yourself, because the Torah says, V'yisim Nikim, that you're not allowed to say you don't care about your reputation, you're not allowed to say it doesn't matter what people think of you, but you have to try to not only avoid wrongdoing, but also the appearance of wrongdoing. So if that's the case, so we have this concern of shad in a couple of places. And here the Gemara mentions it in this context. It's an interesting usage. It could be relevant to Hanukkah specifically, except that the Gemara brings in other places in Halacha where you find this notion, so you have to figure out exactly what its relevance is here. But part of the concern and part of the question is that when you have an issue with Maris Ayin, for example, so there are a couple of tracks. On the one hand, there is a general idea that one should not act in a suspicious fashion or in a misleading fashion, whichever area we're focusing on. And sometimes it goes beyond that, but it's not just a general idea that you shouldn't act in a way that looks bad, but that Chazal specifically prohibits certain behaviors out of a concern of Maris Ayin. So it's another level. It's a general concern not to do things suspicious. So people always ask, with Manazah, for example, they have a business meeting, or they have to make a stop on the highway. They want to go into a non-kosher restaurant, so we've got Maris Ayin. So that's a little bit subjective. It depends on how we perceive. So sometimes you have Maris Ayin as a general concern. And there are certain din, we have certain halakos where Chazal said we're concerned about Maris Ayin, so therefore we will make these rules. And these rules, the Gemara says, when Chazal asked something because of Maris Ayin, it's asur even if nobody's watching, if you look at Chedri Chadar. So here you have a kind of similar question to that. Is it that Chazal were afraid simply of the reality of suspicion, so you shouldn't give people the premise that you're not lighting Hanukkah candles? Or should we say that no, it's going beyond that, and Chazal incorporated into the chiyuv that you should cover all your bases, and not just light at one door, but light at both doors if you have two. So what difference does it make? So on the surface, one relevant question is the question of bracha. When you light on the second door, do you make a bracha? So what does the Torah say about making a bracha on the second door? So the Ran says it makes sense that you wouldn't make a bracha on that. And the Ramah, he passes like that also, that you don't make a bracha on this halakha because of the shot. So on the surface, that sounds like it means that this is not a real mitzvah. This is something we do to avoid concern, but there's no bracha to be recited. Now, there are those who interpret it a little bit differently. So, for example, the Krasi, the Yoris Naipshitz, in commentary here today, so he writes that the reason you don't make a bracha is because it's included in the first bracha. So when you made a bracha on the first Pesach, so then it's going to be inclusive of the second halakha. So that could be the pshat, in which case the lack of bracha doesn't necessarily mean that it's not a part of the mitzvah. The problem is the Ran's language doesn't really sound like it. The Ran's language, where they talk about, since this is Eino Elo Mishum Chashava, there's no bracha, it doesn't sound like it's because it's included in the first one, it sounds because it's lacking the mitzvah. Might
it?
So the question is, should you say that once you talk in between the first and the second, and that should create a problem? So, possibly, it depends on then what's the context. You know, if the idea is maybe you have one house, right? So presumably, if you have two doors on your house, so then you're presumably doing them together. So hopefully you light the first door, and then you'll go and you'll light to the second door. But we could have scenarios where it's not like that. Like, for example, when we talked about Makom Pita and Makom Lina, somebody has two houses, one where he eats and one where he sleeps, and some of the Rishonim maintain that if you're eating in your father's house where you sleep in a different house, you should have to light in the house where you sleep because of the shot. So there, you could theoretically have a good hefsek between the two, and the question becomes more relevant. So there's probably a lot of variables in terms of whether there's a hefsek there or not.
In those Asanai cases, we're still worried about shot. Isn't the implication that you're doing your full mitzvah lighting and with the bracha and everything? If you have your own corner, let's say, if you're on the guest house.
Where you light. You're saying those situations, to say that you make, to say presumably you should make a bracha, because it's, even if it's...
I think that's what the Bosom say, even though that also seems like a chashad issue, so it seems to be difficult when we're saying here with the bracha.
So then it sounds like it becomes a real mitzvah in itself.
Right.
Right, possible. So... I don't totally understand it. Some of the Acharonim have considered this question. So they ask, is it a part of the mitzvah itself or not? Could possibly have an afkamina for the question of whether it's mutter or ishtamish or ur. So that I don't really understand so much, because presumably the whole purpose of lighting this candle is that it will be a candle that is recognizable as an Acharonim. And if using the candle for your benefit, as we've seen, negates that status, it's hard to understand what you've accomplished by lighting this candle and then be allowed to use it. Presumably the whole point, even if it's not an actual mitzvah candle, but certainly regarding how it's perceived by the outside, it should be perceived as a mitzvah candle. And therefore it's hard to understand why there should be a heter, a shamish la'ora, in such a case. Presumably the same mitzvah should apply. But what I found fascinating is that some of the svarim that I saw that I asked this question about whether it's a part of the takana or not, they don't ask what I think is the most important question about that issue. It seems to be totally on that question. What's perhaps the most important question you could ask? If you phrase the question, is this extra halakha on the second door, is this a part of the original mitzvah of Hanukkah, or is it extra concern for shah? Is a more fundamental question you could ask. Anyone, what might that be? I think the most basic question you could ask is, if you fail to do this, are you still going for the mitzvah? If Chazal basically said you have to light not only on your front door, but on any door you have that looks like it could be your front door, maybe that means you only fulfill the mitzvah when you do all of it. Because we saw this a little bit earlier. And when did we see this earlier? When we talked about the Hadlaka and the Beis HaKnesses. Right, the Shulchan Aruch said that you should light in shul, but you're not yotzei without halakha in shul. And the Bra and the Rivash discussed why that is. Why is it that you don't fulfill your obligation of that? And one of the reasons the Bra said is because you still have to light at home because of the shot. Okay, so say you still have to light at home, that's very well and good. But why should that impact your ability to be yotzei? Right? Hi?
I had a different question. How far does this concept go? If you're unable to light outside and, you know, you have your house's apartments or whatever is four-sided and you have, you know, four sides of windows, is there, would you say there's chashan that you, somebody might see one window and not the other one, so you have to light, like, on every side of the house? Like,
so, yes,
how does it go?
There is such a discussion, but the issue of whether it should apply to windows or not is itself a subset of a different question. So we'll see if we get to that question today. Let's just go to address this question. So it would seem to be that that's a more fundamental issue, right? Are you yotzei in mitzvah if you don't like the second door? So here the Vilna Gaon says you're not yotzei in shul because of the pshat issue of not lighting at home. So why don't we say, okay, so you have to light at home, but lamaisa, you fulfilled your halakha in shul. So that would seem to be a bigger nafkamina than all of these issues. The question of, does the mitzvah expand to include all the doors that you may possibly have? Now again, we've mentioned in the past that maybe we have to focus more on the literal meaning of yotzei, that maybe we should not always translate yotzei as a kiyum. That maybe you have a kiyum mitzvah, but yotzei means you have left your obligations, and maybe there are times when we say that you are accomplishing something, but you still have what to do. So what we mean is that you still have to light at home, but that doesn't necessarily mean that you're not accomplishing anything through the lighting in shul. And our modern lingo, we use the word yotzei, it's synonymous with accomplishing anything. Maybe they shouldn't necessarily be understood that way.
Can you grab a chair, please?
Sorry?
Can you grab a chair?
Okay, enjoy.
Thank you so much.
So this this could be relevant to other issues as well. In general, we seem to assume that nowadays, the way it sounds like to the Magen Avraham, and later so on also, that nowadays that we might decide that we don't really have this halacha of pshat anymore, that it's not connected to a Pesach, which relates to Adam's question. And there is a discussion about that. Should we extend the notion to not just your front door and your back door, but also to various windows? If you're lighting in the window, and you have windows along different sides, maybe we should say you have to light on every window. So that gets a little bit to the question of, is it about the reality of suspicion, that we're afraid that any situation where somebody may question if you're doing it or not is a situation that we have to take into account? Or is it more than that? Is it just that Chazal specifically made a takana relating to doors? And when you have more than one door, so then you have an extra issue of chashad. And that also is relevant to the question that Shlomo Zalman and Rabbi Yashiv and others assume that even nowadays, if people light, let's say, even if people do light outside, right? So we discussed before that nowadays, where it's assumed that we don't have this takana anymore, so then there is a whole question as to whether we should continue lighting inside or whether we should move outside. So many assume the most widespread minhag is to continue lighting inside, but there are those who nowadays, especially in Eretz Yisrael, go back to lighting outside. So the question is, if you're lighting outside, so should we say, okay, so now if you have more than one door outside, maybe we restore the din of chashad, and maybe those who are lighting outside have to light at all their doors. So that's what Shlomo Zalman and Rabbi Yashiv and others were making, and they assumed that the nature of the takana seems to be tied in to that initial takana when there was a chiyuv to light by the Pesach HaBayis. And if it's not a chiyuv now, so then the fact that you're choosing one place over another doesn't necessarily create a concern of chashad where you have to light in many different places. Okay, so there's more to say about this, but we'll decide whether we have time to add anything more about it tomorrow, but otherwise we'll move on tomorrow to issues of Ner Shel Shabbos and Ner Shel Hanukkah, which the Gemara talks about. And just to quickly recap what we spoke about today, so we run up again this issue of whether the brachos are part of the mitzvah and how that affects various issues, including whether Shas and Nisan can be disembodied from the Haglaka, and whether Shechiyaru can be disembodied, or whether it's not disembodied, it's connected to Shas and Nisan as an independent mitzvah, and how that affects our understanding of the bracha of Haroa, the machlokes of whether somebody makes it even if they had other people lighting on their behalf, or maybe even if they already lit themselves, they didn't make Shas and Nisan. And then we got into this question of Haroa, and the question of what it applies to, whether it applies also to a lighting in Erev Shabbos, or after a half hour. There's also a question then of Chashad. We talked about the various issues within Chashad, and general Maor Sinai Chashad questions, and the difference between a concern of Maor Sinai and a takana mishum Maor Sinai. And here too, you have perhaps two possibilities. Are we just in general afraid of chashad, or is there a takana mishum chashad, which could have nachaminas such as a bracha or not, and the two different understandings of why you wouldn't make a bracha, and the question of whether it's nis or shamshus la'ora, and the question also of whether you have kiya mitzvah without this. It's also, we should also mention, there's a discussion as well about haroah on the bracha of chashad. They join these two sugyas together, but if somebody sees this extra candle, you can make a bracha haroah on that, which also provokes the question, how is anybody supposed to know which candle is which? That if you see candles on both sides, so maybe there's not going to be an issue from that perspective. So there's also a discussion, as far as I have, about whether the mahadrin is applied to haroah. You have one candle per person in the household, and you have a candle per night. And the assumption seems to be that the takana is really about one candle. So So if the kana is one candle, that could also explain that it will then perhaps accomplish this purpose of not having people suspect you, but it'll also be clear which candle it is, and therefore the question of how it relates to it may be related to it as a chashad candle and not as the primary candle. Okay, we'll stop there.